Welcome to the I-29 Moo U Dairy Podcast. The I-29 Moo University is a consortium of the land-grant universities located in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. This podcast covers timely news, information, and research for today's dairy industry. Hi, my name is Jim Sulfer. I'm the University of Minnesota Regional Dairy Educator, and I'm fortunate to get today to be joined with this podcast with my co-host and colleague from Iowa State University, Fred Hall. Welcome, Fred.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to sit down with you and talk cows and forages. And we've got a cohort with us from South Dakota. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about you.
So I'm the SDSU Extension Forage Field Specialist, and I'm down in South Central South Dakota, but cover basically the whole state. I am more on the agronomy side, but we dive into livestock quite a bit because when you work with forages, that's just what you do. So I'm excited to join you today and talk a little bit about some events we have coming up now that we all work together in our forage group for the region. It's kind of fun to be on the podcast.
Yeah, this has really been nice. I don't know how long have we been doing this, Fred and Sarah, where I don't know if it was kind of accidental on how this all kind of fell together, but it's been really a pleasure. We've got a group that includes Nebraska and South Dakota and then Minnesota and also Iowa. And we've been doing some field days and we've done some webinars, and it's really worked out. I think it's been kind of fun to have these agronomists and then some animal scientists kind of work together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of fun melding of the minds, and we have a good mix of dairy and beef and agronomy and, you know, back to the animal science side. So it's been a good group.
Surprising, right? Forages, cows eat forages. So I think sometimes we get too siloed at all of our universities, and there's a lot of things I think we can learn from each other. Go ahead, Fred.
Sarah, one of our partners is a forage association. Give us some information on those folks.
Absolutely. So a few years ago, at a regional forage meeting, a group got together and decided that we needed more forage networking and outreach opportunities in the area. And I'm from South Dakota, and several of the people in the group were from South Dakota, but we were interested in reaching out to the region, not just our state. So kind of a idea was formed, and we continued brainstorming until we created the Northern Plains Forage Association. So this is a grassroots grower organization that started a couple years ago, and we're growing slowly but surely. It's basically open to any forage growers, buyers, industry people, anyone really with an interest in forages in the region. So we focus on networking and education, mainly just giving people an outlet to talk to each other, a platform to network, and then we offer events throughout the year. And we also do booth work and outreach opportunities at other events as well. We really focus on our annual meeting in December. So we have educational seminars at that, and we've been hosting that in Brandon. That's been going really well, Brandon, South Dakota. And then we work on this field day with this group from Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota. And then we have a few other little tour, different events depending on the year throughout the year. So it's been really fun to watch the group kind of grow and evolve. And we're open to anyone operating in the region. So if you have interest, please check out our website, npforage.com.
It's been good. And it's been what I find interesting is, you know, typically when you've been in a dairy belt in the upper Midwest until maybe the last 10 years or so, it's really been corn silage and alfalfa. You know, I mean, a grass was the ugly little sister.
Yep.
And I'm sure, Sarah, where you grew up, that really isn't where there's a little more beef. They've always been a little more interested, or they've grown a lot more grass because you have a lot more pastures. And I think there's some logical reasons for that. One of the things we're doing a much better job of analyzing grasses and digestibility of grasses than we maybe have in the past. In the old way of analyzing forages, alfalfa really won, typically.
Right.
And now with grasses that have actually a little more potential digestibility, forages look a lot better. And so I think there's some real logical reasons. The other thing I think that's really happened is, and Sarah, you can correct me because this is an agronomy question, but I think there's been more emphasis on breeding better
grasses. I don't think maybe I'm wrong, but 10 years ago you didn't hear about any kind of grass breeding programs or maybe companies focusing more on grasses. Maybe it's just more of a sales pitch, but it just seems like there's been more interest in looking around to try and get good quality grasses that we can grow that are good feed for our dairy cattle. You know, Sarah's an agronomist. Do you have any comments or thoughts?
Yeah, I think that that's been happening for a while. We're hearing about it more now and seeing more interest in it for sure. But I would agree there's more interest in that. And like you said, in our area, it's more common to have small pastures. And then as you get further central and west in the state, they get larger and more abundant. Obviously, it's more common because our soil types and our rainfall change. But the other thing that seems to be gaining popularity or regaining popularity might be a better way to put it is our annual forages. And you know, those annual grasses and some of our annual broadleafs seem to be much more popular with beef and dairy growers alike. You know, we're seeing a lot more dairy folks get in tune with covering their soils, and so they'll cut their silage, which is, you know, silage I think is still kind of king in the area, but you know, like you said, we're diving into other things, and we'll see people put crops in winter annuals a lot of times behind their silage harvest, which is great because they're covering the soil and they're getting a second crop out of it. So we've seen, yeah, a lot of changes, and I would say a lot of positive changes on the agronomy side. There's always some good and some bad, but I would agree that there's been some emphasis on new things for sure.
One of the things that excites me is, you know, we've always talked about ensiling and baling, but now we've got these cocktail mixes that are really boosting the nutrient level for grazers. Are you seeing that out in the western part of our area?
Oh yeah. Yep. The cover crops or just annual crops, cocktail mixes are definitely becoming more popular in the last many years. And we have the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition, and they've done a lot of work and outreach kind of helping people try to get started doing that. And I think that's helped a lot, as well as like the Grasslands Group and in our Forage Association also. So definitely becoming more popular. You know, you get when you do that cocktail type mix, you get more options on the nutrient availability side for the animal, but you also hedge your bets with on the agronomic side. You know, if one species is going to fail, another one might do pretty well. And we'll see people do cool and warm season blends. And while I think you need to focus on one cooler warm season group primarily, you can still have, you know, some cool seasons blended in with your warm seasons and vice versa. And so that kind of also helps if you're on the borderline of planting dates. You know, some might take off right away, and if they're tough, they're going to wait and take off when it cools down or warms up, depending on which you planted and when. So that's kind of a neat take on it. It's also great from a, you know, soil microbiology standpoint, where we're adding lots of different diversity and the microbes like that, and we don't totally understand all of that. A microbiologist could talk a long time with really big words, and I would go, okay. But there's a lot of things we don't quite get yet about soil health, and we're still learning and may never get it all. I can't ever remember the stat how many billion microbes are in a teaspoon of soil. It's something crazy. We'll never really fully grasp that, I don't think, but those cocktail mixes are definitely a positive in a lot of situations. The only major drawback, of course, there's always going to be drawbacks, but the only major one I hear about consistently is people get frustrated if they didn't have a clean field when they put them in and the weeds got ahead of them. You know, typically they're going to choke them out, but if they don't, you're going to have issues because you're not spraying a cocktail mix successfully without killing something.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenge, you know, historically in dairy, and I'm glad we went into that. We typically have not planted those. And again, historically, and I think part of it is because you'd have different mixes, even alfalfa grass mixes. This part the grass would grow well, this part the alfalfa would grow well. As a nutritionist, that kind of drives you crazy, right? Because you're sampling so much oftener and you can't get a real consistent feed. But I think nutritionists have come to accept and work around that. And I think maybe we've learned cows are a little bit more resilient if we have a little more flexibility. But that was going to be my question. I think you covered it really well, Sarah. What's the advantage of a cocktail mix versus a single species? But I think you explained that really nicely.
Well, and one more thing to think about too, Jim, is like the grazing factor. You know, if we're
Yeah.
able to graze it with our dry cows or on a dairy situation or in a beef situation or sheep situation, if we're just getting them out there and grazing, obviously you're nutrient cycling then. You don't have to spread manure. But if we did a good mix, it should be adequate nutrition. You just have to really
Right.
watch things like nitrates and sulfur content to make sure you do a mix with at least 25% grass, I usually say. But if we're trying to cut it, then that's a whole new ball game. If we're ensiling it, that's one thing. But if we're trying to cut something dry, then you really have to consider what you're putting in there. But like you said, in the dairies, I think it's becoming more acceptable. And we see that feed getting mixed and ground in too sometimes. So it's a little more consistent. But
Yeah.
that's definitely a big issue from the nutrition side. You have to be comfortable with it not being perfect. It's not alfalfa, that's for sure.
This kind of walks us right into our forage field day. We're talking about summer annuals and interseeding into different crops. What are we going to see when we're there on July 31st?
Yeah, so we're going to Iowa this year. Fred and Dr. Shelby Gress are going to be our hosts, and we're kind of excited. So we're going to the Western Research Farm in Castaunna, Iowa. Did I say that right, Fred?
I believe so.
Okay. And we have a great lineup that the group put together. So looking at some field demonstrations of forage sorghum for silage. And then also looking at interseeding summer annuals into alfalfa and grazing systems. So a lot of what we're talking about here, those interseeding questions are big, and it's always fun to have those plots so people can actually see how it's done. There's going to be a live nitrate and prussic acid testing demo. So if you're curious about that, we'll have that there, and an interactive forage and weed ID competition. So that should be very interesting because although I've done it many a times, something like it, I'll probably miss some too. So it's always kind of fun to have those contests with people. And I believe we're also having a weeds based talk, right, Fred? We'll have somebody
Yep.
there speaking on weeds and issues in forage systems. So I think it's going to be a great field day. We have kind of a dynamic lineup. Some years this field days focuses on one crop or one system, and other years we kind of keep it fluid depending on people's interests. So this year it's got a variety of topics. We have speakers coming from all over the place. Jeff Jackson from Cropland will be coming. Dr. Maria Salas, she's the ISU sorghum breeder. Dr. Shelby Gress is going to talk. She's the ISU forage extension specialist. And then we'll have Larry Trinnell as well. He's the ISU dairy extension specialist, as well as other speakers. That's just a few that'll be on the docket that day. So we're really excited to have everybody. We are approved for CEUs, so we have a few certified crop advisor credits if you need them. And I think Fred and Jim could probably give you even more details as far as how to sign up and when. Do you have any comments, guys, on what you think is going to be your favorite talk, maybe?
Well, I'm a numbers person. So Larry's presentation on grazing heifer economics, man, the first time I heard that, I just, wow, this is hard to believe. And, he's got the numbers to prove that, we can grow heifers significantly cheaper if we don't have to haul everything in and out. And so I think folks will like that, whether they've got beef heifers they're growing or if they have dairy heifers.
Yeah, I do think that that's a really good topic because I see in central Minnesota here, we've typically thought of pastures as wasteland. We're not like the people out west. And so people put their heifers out on pasture. They've got some rolling ground and then they complain about these pastures because they're not very productive. Well, if they'd manage their corn and soybeans like they manage their pastures, they wouldn't be very productive either. So I think that is something if we really consciously think. So I think it's a really good program for maybe people like that, we don't have a lot of those in at least our I-29 area from a dairy producer standpoint, but I think there are a few people that have some pastures that think about we really need to manage those like we think about managing our corn and soybean fields. And I think we could make our pastures much more productive.
Well, hopefully folks will come, whether they, have five beef cows or 1,000, or they've got two cows. They're selling a niche product off the farm for dairy. I think everybody's going to get a little something out of this. It's real easy to get registered. If you go to go.iastate.edu/2025 Forage Field Day. And if you actually just Google I-29 Forage Field Day, it's the first thing that pops up.
Yeah, and I think you get a good meal. Boy, there aren't too many extension meetings I go to where you get beef anymore, because it's not, but the cattle producers are putting it on. So I bet you it's going to be darn good. I guess that's all I can say. What are some of the other things we do, Fred? I know we've done some webinars related to that, a couple of kind of evening webinars that have went over well. So what else should people be looking for? I think Sarah did a nice job covering what their Forage Association kind of does in face-to-face activities. But how about listeners that might not kind of live in that down in that area around Sioux Falls?
Well, you know, a year ago we wound up not having the field day live, and we went to a webinar based program and had a really good turnout. And so we thought about it, and we actually now are doing a monthly webinar. And when we look at what's coming up, August 20th is our next one. Their evening programs, they're from 7 in the evening till 8:30, and we almost always have three speakers. We've got Dr. Carr, who's going to talk about how tar spot affects silage. You know, we know it's a growing problem in raising corn, and it does have some effect on silage. We've got Shane Campbell, who's going to talk about getting your silage cutter ready for the field. And then Teresa Van Stolen with the USDA field office is going to talk about the programs that they have that are either cost share or some flat out dollars. There's several forage programs. One, we just missed the deadline, but she's going to talk about what that means so people put it on their calendar for next year. And that's in August 20th.
And those are good programs. They're in the evening. So if you work full time, I know a lot of our beef producers, maybe not out in South Dakota, but most of our beef producers, cow calf at least in Minnesota, they're kind of, I'll call them lifestyle farmers, whereas they typically have a job off the farm because they tend to be kind of small herds. And so I don't know about, I know down in at least Southwest Minnesota, it's kind of the same situation relative to probably as you get out west, where those guys are full time farmers. Is there anything else we need to know about the growing season this year, Sarah, friend in this area? I know it's been kind of a little bit of a challenge getting up some of your forages, but boy, through most of this upper Midwest, the crops look, other word, drowned out up here, but the crops look awful good. Once we started getting a little bit of heat, we've been getting some moisture. It's boy, stuff is coming along really well. And I think most producers are pretty optimistic. Even if trying to dodge the rains and maybe getting up your alfalfa crop. What are you guys seeing in your areas?
We're still sitting decent as far as regional moisture at the moment. We're still a little dry in the subsoil, but we have gotten some rains now finally. However, I think that really dry fall and dry spring set us back quite a ways with the first cutting. So it's picking up. It's definitely improved, but people were a little slow and set back with their first cutting if it wasn't under any irrigation, alfalfa wise. Now, looking at grass, I know grass stocks are a little behind. So that's been a little bit of a struggle for our beef and sheep guys, but hopefully it'll, you know, if we keep getting rain, it won't be such an issue as it has been in the past.
Have you been getting rain? Because I know you guys had really dry last year, didn't you, out west? And so
It's been dry
has
all
that been
over. Yeah.
better, or are you still dry?
No, it's improving. It was dry. And then finally, the majority of the state, I mean, it's always different in isolated areas, but the majority of the state has started getting some rains. Hard to catch up, but we're getting there.
Yeah. your area, Fred?
Well, as we've been getting good rains, so things are in good shape that way. The thing that's also coming on, once the rain started coming on and the heat units, man, we are seeing some weed pressure come. And that, I think, just because it was dry, we recognized some weeds like that. But now all of a sudden, wow, we've got a lot of weeds showing up.
Yeah, I can relate to that out at my place. Boy, I think anybody listening to you, if you live in town, I mean, there's just weeds everywhere and lots of them, and they grow fast. Why is, Sarah, you're an agronomist. Why is it we got things like buckthorn and weeds and Canada thistles? Can we make animals love those things? I'm telling you,
You
why
need
is it?
goats. Get some goats.
Maybe. Why do we have weeds? I don't know. That's just goofy to me. That it just seems like weeds grow, and maybe that's why they're weeds. I don't know, but
Just
boy,
it's
I'm
just
telling
a
you.
plant out of place. It's only
I
weeds and they
know,
can
I've heard
be.
that over and over again, but I don't know how you get rid of them.
Dr. Eldon Cole from Missouri, he would say, when he was young, there just weren't that many weeds. If you had a fescue field, it was a clean field. If you had a alfalfa field. But when we started bringing in hay from other locations, all of a sudden we got a whole new batch of weeds that maybe like where we're at even better than where they came from. So that was his explanation on why we see different weeds and more of them.
I would guess it sure spreads around as a potential spread around weed seeds. I think there's some issues that that's what they think in Minnesota, where some of these weeds came from too. So
Well,
I think.
yeah, we've got, the custom harvesting crews spread a lot of weed seeds, and we can move equipment a lot further than we used to be able to. And tillage, of course, brings up old weed seeds, and yeah, but the movement of equipment, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a challenge sometimes, but we got, so far we've had pretty, do we have pretty good herbicides for our forages, or is that pretty limited? I think you touched on that a little bit about some of these cocktail mixes.
It kind of depends on what you're doing, but there are some good options out there. You just have to be careful that you watch grazing intervals and haying intervals. But there's a reasonable number of options. It's just that if you're going to head down the path of multi-species, that's where you really run into, considerations. And, for example, herbicide-tolerant alfalfa, it's a great tool the first year or two, and then after that, your alfalfa should be self-sufficient and should be thick enough to not have those weeds in it. However, if you have it in a mix in a stand grass or something like that, then we're looking at, okay, well, obviously we're not going to be able to use glyphosate or glufosinate there, but there's some other options of herbicides we could potentially try. But once we get into a cocktail mix, then you're just kind of stuck with the goats. Like, you don't have a lot of
Yeah,
options.
always an option, right? That's what I always hear. Get a bunch of goats.
Yeah,
So
well, you
we maybe
could.
need more goats. Yeah, that way
I
you don't
have a
have to
lot of
get
horse
more.
people that have gone to that. There's a whole system. They can rent goats. People own goats to rent. It's a real
Yep,
thing.
not a bad
Exactly.
gig. Yeah, they're going to come back. Goats and sheep, I guess.
Yep.
Then I like goats, so they're fun. And you keep them off your car and keep them in the fence. That's always just seems to be like the biggest challenge with those buggers. They're friendly, though. They're like a dog.
Well, we've talked about a lot of things and we've talked about our 4-H field day. I'd like to encourage people to go ahead and get registered for that. I didn't mention, but there is a $20 charge, or if you're bringing multiple people from your farm or ranch, the most you'll pay is $50. So we'd sure like to see all the chairs filled on July 31st.
Yeah, well, I appreciate this was a nice discussion with you, Sarah. It's always good to get some 4-H people and some cow people together. I know we don't always interact like we should, but this has been a good partnership, and it's nice to catch up on kind of where we're at with 4-Hs in the upper Midwest. So, with that, do you have any closing comments, Sarah, as far as 4-Hs or what people should kind of be thinking about here in the upper Midwest?
I think, most people by this point in the season are in tune to what's going on, and but if they have questions, they can always reach out to us, and they should really come on July 31st to Castaneda, Iowa for the Forage Field Day.
All right, thank you. Well, thanks, Sarah, and thanks, Fred, for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our annual sponsors, including our gold sponsor, Iowa Corn Growers Association. Please visit their website at iowacorn.org. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Pioneer, Connor Agri Service, Diamond V, and Central Vet Clinic. I-29 Moo University is an equal opportunity educator. For the full discrimination statement, visit extension.iastate.edu/diversity/EXT.